Okay, Andy, if you'd like to start.
Good morning, everyone. Excuse me. Good morning, everyone. This is Andy Levine with the American Seed Trade Association. We appreciate you joining us this morning for our weekly update on COVID activities and the various policies that are changing as we go along. We'll move through the agenda today. We've got an hour scheduled, but we'll be respectful of your time. As always, we try to follow. We do follow the ask the antitrust statement. So if anybody has any questions on that, please let me know. As well, if you have any questions that come up during the conversation, please email Ellen Zimmerman at ezimmerman at betterseed.com. And she can bring those questions up to us. Or when we get to the questions and answers, you can press 01 on your phone, and that will open up your line, and you can ask a question yourself. So just a few of the housekeeping efforts there. We continue to be extremely active in the activities here in Washington, D.C., dealing with policy and the various initiatives to make sure that the agriculture industry is properly represented as we move through the coronavirus restrictions and then move to get off of the restrictions to make sure that we've got that ability to serve our customers out there in the field. So let us know if we're missing anything. And with that, I'll go ahead and get straight into the domestic issues. Jane, do you want to start out?
Sure, and thanks, Andy. Before I talk about the CARES Act program, I just wanted to mention, I think all of you guys have seen in the news that President Trump has moved to use the Defense Protection Act to keep meatpacking plants open. And some of the things that we're looking at for announcements in the next day or so are, you know, will the USDA be providing additional PPE to those plants? And will they, you know, how will they be addressing liability issues that may crop up from that as well? So that that's just one little bit of newer items that are in the news. So under the CARES Act, and you may have seen this information in your emails from us, the USDA has announced their plans for what they're calling the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program, the CFAP program. So they were, this is a $19 billion program. There's going to be direct payments to farmers and then also food purchases as part of that program. The breakdown that we believe is going to happen is going to be $9.6 billion for livestock producers, $3.9 billion for row crop producers, $2.1 billion for specialty crop producers, and then a $500 million sort of other category where you might find floriculture, nurseries, hemp, those folks will be in there. One of the groups that's not on that list is money for ethanol production. And Virginia will touch a little bit on that when she talks about what we might see in future stimulus packages. So right now, we do not know exactly how USDA is going to divvy up those funds or what criteria they're going to use to make the individual payments to the farmers. Those rules are right now at the White House. I anticipate that we will see them next week. And, you know, how they plan to calculate the losses for each commodity is being hotly debated. You do need to show over a 5% price loss. So one of the things that's come up is that wheat and rice producers may not qualify for this program. So essentially they're trying to cover 85% of the price loss portion for products that are marketing between like February and April. And then they'll do another 30% coverage for losses that occur from May to the end of the marketing year. So the University of Illinois did some calculations on what they see are the price losses. So they're estimating that this could result in payments, again, for in the row crop space of $2.6 billion for corn farmers, $825 million for soybeans, $320 million for cotton, and maybe $155 million for others. And then, you know, it's important to note also that programs like ARC and PLC, the Farm Title I programs for the Farm Bill, crop insurance, those payments are also going to be made as well. One of the big sticking points in the program is that they do have limitations on how much the farmers can be paid under this program. So it's $125,000 per commodity and $250,000 per entity. And this is a big concern for livestock producers and also produce folks as well. And there's quite a lot of pressure has come from Congress to change those limitations. But, you know, the problem is it's not a huge amount of money and there is a lot of need. And so there's also counter pressure to limit those payments as well. There should be additional, even outside of new legislation, there should be additional money coming from what's known as the CCC funds on July 1st, so there could be additional direct payments or additional money for purchases. So the purchase program is $3 billion. They're intend to do $100 million per month each for meat, dairy, and produce. And USDA is going to sign contracts with food distributors who are then going to go out and make the purchases. There's also been, you know, additional funds for SNAP and other purchase programs as well. So hopefully fairly soon you will start to see some of this additional money flowing. And then the other aspect is many of you guys are aware of the CARES Act was additional money that has happened more recently is additional funding for the Paycheck Protection Program and also the SBA's emergency disaster loan. So as has been in the press, the PPP program got another $310 billion. A lot of the conversation that we've been hearing is, you know, clarity that farms have access to the PPP programs and that rural banks have better access to write the PPP loans. You know, I did see a letter. There are still concerns that a lot of those traditional rural banks hadn't made SBA loans before, and so they were having to go through a process of getting approved by SBA, which is slowing things down. So I think it sounds like for farms, there still are some unanswered questions about their ability to access those loans. I did put up on our website some additional guidance from the Department of Treasury about calculating payroll for seasonal employees. They're trying to make that more flexible, and that may be of interest for some of you guys who are applying. I know it's been a mad rush to submit those applications if you hadn't already gotten approved. And hopefully you guys who have applied are going to have some success and your banks are going to have some success. So that is my update on the CARES Act. And Virginia, you want to talk about what's going to happen for the next stimulus package?
Sure. Thanks, Jane. And good morning, everyone. Before we jump into the discussions of any future stimulus package or packages, I'm going to be discussing what we call in D.C. jargon marker bills. So these are bills that are introduced that most likely on a good day would not move on their own, but they're intended to be bills that would be swept up into any larger package. So that's what we're going to be talking about here. Jane mentioned a lot of things with the CARES Act and previous stimulus packages. And in the ag space, there are a lot of members who have expressed concerns with the payment limitations, how USDA is distributing the money. So they've started to introduce bills to course correct at their point of view for USDA and for farmers. So first off, Austin Scott and a coalition of about 31 bipartisan House members introduced an additional funding package for USDA. This bill would provide $50 billion to support ag producers impacted by COVID-19, and it would also prohibit USDA from applying any payment limitation to payments made for producers under the bill, except to ensure that the total payments made to producers do not exceed the damages. You know, these members of Congress have heard from their constituents that the money that USDA has is not enough. $50 billion is over double the money that was allocated to USDA in the CARES Act, and they feel that by putting payment limitations on the money, that they're not going to help anyone enough. I think Secretary Perdue in interviews has expressed that he understands their concerns, but payment limitations are USDA's way of making the money go further for more producers. And then on the flip side of that, Colin Peterson, who's chair of the House Ag Committee, has expressed that he wants to see more parameters around any funds that Congress might appropriate to USDA. He doesn't have a detailed plan himself, but he has said in the media he does not intend to give USDA a blank check in future stimulus packages. And if there is language without payment limitations, he would not support that. And so that will be some interesting policy dynamics to look out for. Another marker bill is introduced. A bipartisan House group introduced the Clean Fuels Deployment Act of 2020. This is intended for support for the ethanol industry, which, as Jane mentioned, has really been hit because of COVID-19 and has so far not been able to access USDA dollars. This would authorize $500 million over 5 years to help retailers offer higher ethanol blends. It would incentivize the deployment of fueling infrastructure for blends greater than 10% and biodiesel blends greater than 20%. So I think that we will probably see something related to ethanol in the next stimulus package. There are several groups working on what they call a Heroes Fund concept. One idea has floated would provide a $25,000 pandemic premium pay increase for essential frontline workers that would go until December 31st of this year. And there are some healthcare incentives for healthcare workers and first responders. Other ideas include providing income and payroll tax relief for frontline workers. This bill or these concepts have not been introduced in Congress yet, but they're still floating out there. We're still pretty far away on these, I think. You know, ag is considered essential, and I know many members of Congress want to ensure that there is relief for not just healthcare or first responders, but for everyone who's consider it an essential employee during this crisis. So that's something we'll continue to watch. And finally, Senate Democrats are proposing that as part of the next stimulus package, there'll be a rural broadband package included. A proposal that was unveiled yesterday would invest about $80 billion over the next 5 years to deploy high-speed internet in underserved rural communities. Previously, Democratic leadership in the House have said they want to have an infrastructure package attached to phase four, phase five, whatever we call the next stimulus package. However, Leader McConnell on the Senate side has said that he will not move any stimulus package with an infrastructure package attached to it. However, rural broadband could be one of those issues that is technically infrastructure but could move because that would provide a very wide benefit for a wider range of members of congressional delegations and districts. So a lot of stuff to keep our eyes on as we move forward. The House will not be back in session until May 11th at the earliest. They were planning to come back next week, and then upon consultation with the congressional physician, they decided not to simply because they could not handle social distancing requirements at this time. Keep in mind, it's not just members of Congress who have to be in the building at the same time. We have janitorial staff, cafeteria workers, other support staff, so it would be a really crowded building at the time. However, the Senate is still intending to come back on Monday, so we will see what that looks like as of next week, but right now all signals indicate the Senate will be back in D.C. next week. So that is what I have on the future stimulus pack. Oh, Jane, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, I just wanted to also add that, you know, these liability issues and lawsuit issues are certainly on a lot of people's minds, both the White House and also in the Senate. So, and we did sign on to a letter asking Congress to address that in the next package.
Yes, thank you. So that's what we have for the stimulus packages, past and present. Quickly, I will move to two other topics, trucking. So as you'll recall, there was an emergency declaration from the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration in late March waiving certain hours of service requirements for truckers engaged in COVID-19 relief. That declaration has been expanded several times to include more of the ag value chain. However, seeds and crop protection tools currently do not fall within the declaration. Last week, the Pesticide Policy Coalition, of which AFSCME is a member, sent a letter to FMCA asking them to expand the hours of service waiver for ag inputs, like seed and chemicals. The feedback that we received from the acting administrator of FMCSA is unlikely unless there are specific issues provided to FMCSA to prove that there's a need for this waiver. I will say from our AFSCME perspective, we have not heard any companies who have had trucking issues because of the hours of service requirement. So our ask is that if your company is having a specific issue that we can give to FMCSA because you could not get your seed from point A to point B because of hours of service, please let me know. We haven't heard of any issues, but if there are issues out there, we need to know about them so we can provide those as examples as to why this waiver is needed. And finally, for immigration, I think most of you will have seen in the news last week, President Trump signed an executive order last Wednesday restricting immigration into the United States for 60 days. There was a lot of hullabaloo because he tweeted about it first before actually signing it a day later, so there was about 24 hours where there was a lot of uncertainty around what that would look like. The good news is for ag is that migrant workers who are on H-2A visas are exempt from that order, as are visa holders already in the country and those with pending green card applications. So as with the trucking issue, if your company is having issues with your migrant labor getting into the U.S., please let me know. And with that, I will turn it over to Pat.
Good morning, everybody. I hope everybody's healthy and safe. I'll start off with the state legislatures have been kind of sporadic in what they've been doing lately, and some are meeting virtually, some are not meeting, but that's starting to shift slightly this month. Middle of the month, I think we're going to see some activity start to move there. I think, just as a guess, but it's just all indications lead to it, that most of the focus is going to continue to be on COVID activities, and any other legislation is going to take a back seat. Some of the states are under time constraints that they have to get wrapped up here pretty soon. So some are making adjustments because of their delay. So we'll just have to kind of wait and see how they go. I think that as a result, also as a result of the virus, any legislation that's introduced or has even prior to the quarantines, anything that has a funding rider on it is going to have a real hard time getting passed because the state's resources are just getting depleted seriously as a result of this virus. And so all focus is going to be on saving money, making money, those types of things. A couple of things that have come up that I think were indicative of that particular trend is there's a bill that was passed in Washington State already that would allocate $300,000 to study chlorpyrifos and create rules to limit its use. The governor has vetoed that bill, not because of the purpose of the bill, but just funding allocation is all going towards COVID. And then also in the bill was another bill to find alternatives to chlorpyrifos. And so that ban that was originally part of that is off for now. So that's kind of an interesting switch on that. And another situation is in Minnesota. There was a environmental bill and a natural resources trust fund allocated $5 million for study of invasive species and that types of things. That the governor of Minnesota said he's not going to allow that bill to be heard. So there was an opportunity there for some research and genetic testing for weeds and that type of thing. That's just not going to happen. So other issues like that are beginning to kind of fade out, and we'll see everything. Of course, we'll keep an eye on things as we go. I think that the revenue sources during the spring of 2021, I'm already making bets, are going to be totally focused on raising money. So we'll keep an eye on that for sure. To follow up on our last call, we had some questions about masks and the update. We did a quick survey to all of our state agribusiness and seed associations and related organizations. In general, the results revealed that most cities and states suggest wearing at least a cloth mask, and a lot of them have that requirement. But a cloth mask is sufficient just because of the limitations of the strong, the better PPEs. So, but I think that position is probably going to be in place for a while. My suggestion, if you have truckers traveling or people traveling to other states, throw a cloth mask in the cab and use it that way. For all of these different changes going on within the cities and the state, it's hard to keep up with. There's so many different. Every city's got something different, it seems, and every state's different, and they're all in different stages of reentry. So there's a good resource that's on our COVID website. If you'll take a look at it, it is updated daily. It lists every single rule, regulation, governor's decree, every activity that has to do with a city and a state. It's very comprehensive. I highly recommend if you do interstate business and have people traveling to check it out because it'll make a big difference for you. And again, it's been posted to our Ask the COVID website. So that's all I've got for right now. And I think we're at the question and answer portion of the program. So I go ahead and toss that out. And I guess, Ellen, are you handling that? Or Libby?
I'm on it, Pat.
Got it. Thank you.
I'm not seeing any questions in the queue. That's 01 to get in line to answer a question on the phone, or you can always email me, ezimmerman@betterseed.org, to submit a question by email. I think we can go ahead and move on to the international update. And then if you have any questions for the domestic votes, we can include that in the Q&A at the end of the international update. So Abigail, do you want to go ahead and kick us off?
Sure. Thanks, Ellen. Good morning, everybody. I am going to focus on two regulations that came out from federal agencies this week, designed to hopefully ease some of the challenges that importers and exporters are facing. So the first is a temporary rule that came out from Customs and Border Protection, which basically allows importers to defer any regular customs duty payments for up to 90 days on products that were imported in March and April, but only if the importer is either partially or fully shut down their operations now and has had their gross revenue reduced by at least 60% in late March and April. So this is for imports coming in to businesses that are experiencing impacts of COVID here in the U.S. Unfortunately, this delay does not apply to those special tariffs, including the Section 301 tariffs imposed on some of our vegetable and flower seed products from China. For those following that issue with us, the good news is that the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative did grant another one of our exclusions last week on mung beans, so we're up to 8 exclusions granted and 12 remaining in the queue for consideration. Then moving over to the Federal Maritime Commission, this commission has jurisdiction and oversight on issues at the ports with ocean carriers, logistics operations surrounding imports and exports on the water. For several years, there's been a petition that the ag industry was very involved with, expressing concerns that ocean carriers were taking advantage of imposing fees on shippers for profit, specifically the detention and demurrage per diem fees that go in place after a shipper's contracted free time is up. So the purpose of the fees is really to incentivize returning a container back to the port or picking it up on time so it's not taking up space at the port terminals. But there was concerns that these ocean carriers and terminals were imposing fees when it was impossible for a shipper or a trucker to pick up and return a container due to circumstances outside of their control. So that would be things like the terminal is closed and, you know, there's a delay for a government inspection, the container might still be on the ship. And in that case, you know, how is the fee really an incentive if it's impossible to pull from the port in general. So the COVID concerns at the ports and worries about ports temporarily closing due to an outbreak of the virus really exacerbated the need for guidance and sped up that process at the Federal Maritime Commission. So this week they've announced guidance opposing these unfair charges under circumstances where it's impossible to retrieve a container. And they said that importers should be notified when their cargo is actually available for retrieval and that these detention and demurrage policies should be clear and use consistent terminology. So we're really pleased by this outcome. It's not legally binding. The guidance isn't, but the Federal Maritime Commission opposition to these practices will really go a long way in helping fight back on these charges. And some of that guidance can also be included in shipping contracts. So we know this has been an issue for some of our members who've been hit by these unfair charges, and we're really hopeful that this guidance is a step in the right direction to clarify when and when not to impose these fees. So the rule came out yesterday. We'll put it on the website for you to see as well. Two other things quickly. Andy was interviewed by American Shipper, which is a FreightWaves publication on the logistics of seed movement, and basically explaining the responses that seed companies are making to move seed via sea and air during the COVID pandemic. And we're excited about that because that is a publication that's read closely by all of these transportation decision makers and operators. So excited to have our industry highlighted there. A final point is that ASTA continues to work with other national seed associations and the International Seed Federation. We're sharing information about the current situations and getting some really good feedback on what's happening in other parts of the globe. So please don't hesitate to contact us if you have a country-specific concern, and we're happy to track down some additional information for you. So that's all from me, and I will turn it over to Rick.
Okay, thank you, Abigail. Regarding phytosanitary, there's really not much to report. It's pretty much status quo from what I reported on the last call. Nothing COVID-19 related, but on TOB, RFB, the one issue that's come up is there are some companies that have been wanting to import pelleted tomato seed into the U.S., and have been denied import permits to do that. And I'm working with the APHIS staff. They have agreed to develop a mechanism to allow pelleted seed into the U.S. So we're in the final throes of trying to get that that mechanism worked out. Other than the typical phytosanitary issues that come up at this time of the year relative to additional declarations or country requirements, it's a typical kind of stuff. So, again, if and when you have any issues relative to phytosanitary, please don't hesitate to get in touch. Thank you.
I had a question come in over email. We're hearing that some folks are hearing of shortages or long delivery times for testing of kits. Many seed companies rely on for testing. This makes sense with all the COVID testing. The question is, are we hearing any public or private action to increase production of these supplies?
This is Rick. I haven't heard anything. I will check. And any information that I get on that, I will quickly get it out to the group here through Ellen, but I'll check right in on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick. If you have a question, you can email me, ezimmerman@betterseed.org, or push 01 on your phone to unmute yourself. I will go ahead and move into ASTA resources while we wait on questions. So we are continuing to update the COVID-19 webpage within the Better Seed CareDirect.org website under the News tab. Some of our newest resources include new links and information on PPP. There's also an FAQ link with special information to agriculture. We also have the Small Business Administration PPP program, additional criterion for seasonal employees and, or excuse me, employers, and new guidance on disinfecting facilities. So check out the COVID-19 hub on betterseed.org. Again, that's under the News tab. You can also access the members-only resources by clicking login in the top left corner of the betterseed.org website, or there are links to that login page within the COVID-19 hub. If you have issues logging in, you can email me or call me at 419-618-7167, and I'd be happy to help you get your login credentials. Our CSS exhibitor registration is open, and you can find information online at the betterseed.org website under the Events tab. We will have our first Policy and Leadership Development Conference virtual session on Monday, May 19th. Our key speaker will be John Newton with the American Farm Bureau, as well as a speaker from a land-grant university. The talk will focus on commodity crop economics and prices. If you're looking for training or specific resources, please let us know so that we can work on scheduling webinars with industry experts or finding those resources. Finally, we know many of you and your companies are going the extra mile and doing positive things to help your communities during these challenging times. If you or your colleagues have stories to share, please send them my way so we can share them through the AFTA channels. That's all I had for resources updates. Is there anything else from the staff? Again, if you have a question to ask one of our staff members, you can email me or push 01 to ask on the phone. Jane or anyone else, is there any closing comments or thoughts we have?
Ellen, thanks for pulling all that together and monitoring the questions from the background. As all of you can see, we continue to go through a lot of various issues from the state level to the national and international. If there are some areas that you see that we're missing, please don't hesitate to holler, or if we need to get some additional, get deeper into these issues as we go forward. We'll continue these calls for the foreseeable future as things change and send you notices for them moving forward. Anything there, Ellen, before we sign off?
Nope, I'm not seeing any questions. If I missed it, again, you can email me and I'll be sure to get you an answer from either resources I have or one of our staff members.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone. Have a great weekend, and please be safe out there. Take care. Bye.